Paging Brandon, do you read me? Do you read?
Brandon, come again.
The Not a Thing Podcast. We're back. Episode 155. We took a very, very long weekend for Labor Day. We took the week before Labor Day off from the podcast. So hope everyone, at least in the United States, enjoyed Labor Day. And if you're not in the United States and you, for whatever reason, didn't somehow get Monday off anyway, sorry, man. Sucks. America! We are glad to be back, and I've been recording again. We'll try and keep it to weekly, at least for a few months. We're probably going to drop another week in there for around Christmas, the winter hiatus, as we've done the last couple of years. But we've been pretty good. I mean, it's still roughly weekly. We're mostly weekly.
It's still roughly free, so yes. You get what you pay for.
Exactly. And if you would like to pay for the show, pay for the privilege of sponsoring the show, we would love it, mostly because, you know, cash money money, as they say.
Who said that?
Is that not a thing?
That's not a thing.
Maybe not. Okay. Well, anyway, our podcast is free. If you would like to sponsor us, we'd love to say your thing on the air. But if you would like to say your thing and be a guest for the show, we're still seeking guests. I do have some guests lined up. It's 100% real this time. So
It's happening.
So look forward to that. We're going to have some guests on the show. If you have a thing and would like to be on our show as a guest, just let us know. The HAL 900 will be happy to take your request on our website and forward the notice along, and we'll just have you on the show. It'll be fun. You could talk about whatever you want. It's really not that big of a deal. We have so much to talk about, so we're going to just pop right in. We're going to go from America, where we have Labor Day, to China, where they have really poor air quality. there's I guess an index of air quality, and it's I forget what the scale is, but right now, like, the normal state of air in Beijing anyway is like at 160. And there was a military parade for the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II. China was specifically kind of celebrating the defeat of Japan, which I don't know. China had some stuff to do with that, but anyway.
You're welcome, China. You're welcome.
In China, in the weeks leading up to this parade, they banned something like half of the 5 million registered cars that are in the city center of Beijing, and then asked a bunch of factories, like hundreds of factories, to halt production in order to get the air quality up. And the air quality went from 160 to, I think it was 17. And then, you know, it's blue, it was beautiful, and they took pictures of it for the parade, and they're on, I think it's CNN's website. And then within the span of, I think it was like a week, it was immediately back up to the pollution levels that it was. So they show the before and after picture. It's pretty horrible. So
seems like China could be nice.
Yeah.
It has the potential to be nice.
Right. And I think it also is, you know, it's also a measure of how quickly you can affect very material air quality change and hopefully kind of reverse some of the climate change pain that also does to the Earth, but it is pretty striking. I wasn't in Beijing, but I was in Shanghai for work, and I went up to one of the very, very large towers that's there. I think it was the Jinmao Tower. They hadn't finished building the current tallest one in Shanghai, but in any case, the Jinmao Tower, I think it's 88 stories tall, and you get up to the top, and there are these signs on your way to the observation deck that say, you know, you can it's so high up that you can actually appreciate and experience the curvature of the Earth if you can look left and right and see the horizon. The problem is, with all of the smog, you can barely see like six blocks. It was really, really terrible. So pollution in China, not a thing. I think pollution in general is not a thing. But
they're really taking their dress blues to a new level.
Yeah, do your best, spare the air, all that kind of good stuff. All I know is, at least in California, in San Jose, traffic has gotten significantly worse. So if only to alleviate the commute time of your fellow man, you know, spare the air.
Sounds like you need another recession. Worth it. We don't want that.
Yeah. I do remember traffic being significantly better only a few years ago.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah.
2008 traffic was great.
There's probably a downside in there somewhere, but
yes.
Yeah. Speaking of downsides that that may or may not be there, there's some news out of the UK where a company and some scientists have engineered an additive to ice cream. It's a protein that supposedly is created by a bacteria that's naturally occurring, and the protein bonds with water and fat, the fat in the cream and the air, and makes and will form essentially a shell. Not exactly. It supposedly forms a shell which doesn't appreciably change the texture of or the flavor of the ice cream, but it prevents it from melting in the sun. And I think this is really horrible. Just
not a thing.
Not a thing. I don't know about you, but there's something kind of nice about having to eat the ice cream before it melts. I think that's part of the joy of having ice cream. Otherwise, you're just kind of having some weird flavored cold thing, which eerily doesn't melt. And as much as they say it's a natural ingredient, so are all sorts of things that are poisonous to you. Snake venom is a natural ingredient. You don't want that in your ice cream. Not that I'm saying that snake venom is used to make whatever this protein is, but come on, it's ice cream. It's supposed to melt. That's part of the fun. And there's nothing better than like the melted ice cream when you pour the hot fudge on it and you get that kind of, some of it's melted and some of it's not, and kind of fighting with it.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's that this is a solution to a problem that doesn't exist.
This is the problem with today's society.
I don't know.
Ice cream should melt.
I like...
Nothing lasts forever.
Yes. I like that ice cream does melt. I mean, it does say that ice cream will still melt because it this only affects like the outside of it that's exposed to the air. Essentially, the inside of it can still melt, and eventually the whole thing would just melt, and then I would think it would like catastrophically fail if it melted from the inside out. That'd be real weird and probably disgusting at the same time.
That was an inside out.
Yeah. Ice cream truthers. I stand by my assessment. This is a solution to a problem that doesn't really exist. It's not a thing.
So it's another way to make ice cream even more expensive.
And plus, I'm sure whatever this additive is probably not something that you available to people that are making ice cream at home, doing or ice cream at camp, doing that little globe where that you fill with the cream and the ice and the salt, and then you toss it back and forth to shake it up. Ice cream's fun, and it should melt. Maybe I'm just thinking of ice cream because it's like 100 million degrees here right now. It's been 100 degrees, over 100 degrees for the last 2 days, and it looks like it's going to continue through this week. We've reached September, everybody, in California anyway. This usually is the hottest month of summer, despite being, the traditional end of summer. It also is like they've saved up all of the heat index credits and are slowly, burning them away in summer. In San Francisco, at one point today, it was 104 degrees. But the crazy thing is, as big as San Francisco is with the different microclimates that are around, it was 104 degrees at Twin Peaks, at the weather station at Twin Peaks, and then 64 degrees at Point Richmond. So a 40-degree swing in the same city. That's just not okay.
Weather is weird.
Yes, yes. Also weird is an idea that I guess is not a new idea, but is gaining a lot of traction. Right now, legalization of marijuana has probably one of the strongest kind of popular supports in a while. We've talked about it on the show a few times. There are definitely some states that have legalized it for recreational use, and a large number of them have legalized it for medical use. And the federal government pretty much has all but said that they're not prosecuting. So they've almost decriminalized it to the point where it's effectively legal. Not that it's 100% legal. Anyway, what this is doing is kind of causing an explosion in the different companies that are trying to differentiate themselves, because anyone can, grow and harvest pot, but delivering it in different ways is becoming the differentiator. So one in particular is marijuana-infused wine. And according to the article we found, this dates back thousands of years. They've found wine with psychotropic resins in the vessels that held them in like caves, and there's all sorts of stuff about just infusing different things into wine, including marijuana. So there are a couple companies that are out there that are introducing it into wine. It seems like a fairly easy process. It's just the way I believe it works is the psychoactive ingredient THC is not soluble in water, but it is soluble in both fat and alcohol. So you essentially just leave it in the wine as it's fermenting, and the THC will be infused into the alcohol. So it's not even an extra step, really, for winemakers if they really wanted to do it. The one sad bit in the article that I noticed is that the one of the major cultivators of this, the featured cultivator, at least in the article, her beef with the alcohol industry was she hates grain alcohol or grain derived alcohols. And that is not a thing.
What about whiskey?
As a fine lover of whiskey and bourbon, I think that that is unfortunate. But
although I don't know if I'd want a THC infused bourbon.
No, I don't. I don't know if
that
I'd
sounds
want,
too. That sounds too busy.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want a THC infused wine. I think that there's a lot of because I think there's a lot of different flavors already in a lot of wines, and people can get really snobby over just that. I think adding THC to that is just asking for it. And also, I think the mix and match nature of it is weird. Like it seems like they're trying to roll pot up into kind of a more refined market, or like kind of upsell it to people that want to drink wine. And I don't know if there's that much crossover, because I don't know. I think it's, you know, singular experiences are kind of important. And then I think what this does is it kind of dilutes it a little bit. I don't know. Wine is,
well, I know both those things are very popular in this area.
I think the problem is that both wine and pot kind of have a reputation of being kind of relaxing already, and I think comboing them doesn't necessarily work well. Whereas we've talked about the pot infused like coffee that was made or being made in, I think it was Washington. I forgot to look that up when I was there. Totally spaced. But anyway, I thought that sounded more interesting just because of the kind of the stimulant effects of coffee versus the kind of everything else effects of pot. I thought that would be more interesting just because of the interplay. Whereas I think if you had wine with pot in it, you would just be completely like couch locked all night.
Well, it's like you can buy a really nice TV, and at the time you could buy a nice VCR, but there's always the option of the TV VCR combo. Mm-hmm. Never as good. It's like the worst of both worlds.
Right.
That's what I think of when I think of this product.
Wow. TV VCR. I never had one. I somehow,
because you have taste. and money.
Right. Well, even when I was in college, I think I bought a used VCR on Craigslist in order to have kind of a VCR, even though I never recorded anything. Because now that I think about it, or I mean, I guess I wouldn't use it to record. It was more for playback. Yeah, that was the deal. Because in college, there was a there was a local newspaper that was kind of a free local newspaper, and it had a coupon in it because they, if you remember way back, one of those companies that is no longer a thing, Hollywood Video, had just opened, and the one nearest campus had a coupon that was like 2-for-1, but it had no expiration date on the coupon. And so I just took like every free paper I could get my hands on for the like weeks, like 3 or 4 weeks that ad was running. And I just had, you know, half off every video I could ever want from a Hollywood Video.
I'm not sure if you've told that story on the podcast before or just in life, but I've heard that story before.
It's a good one. It's a good one.
We have done many episodes.
But in any case, yeah, pot wine. I wouldn't poo-poo it. I would probably try it. I'm not sure I would buy a whole bottle. It would
give it the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, it would make wine tastings much more fun though.
Oh, Jeebus. That sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, from one possibly bad idea to the prevention of another, Google is looking into some interesting stuff. So, and this is, I think this is still Google. They haven't alphabetized this tool yet, but they have a mobile browser friendliness test. It's kind of a like one of those things that you if you were a web developer, you would check on your site just as a way to see if it would look good on a mobile browser or have features that were optimized for mobile browsing. And a lot of websites will run their stuff through this verifier, so they can have it certified that Google, Google finds this, mobile browser friendly. And one of the things that they're
Google approves.
One of the things that Google is disapproving of, and I also disapprove of this is ads that are specifically for downloading apps. So they ads that pop up and say, "Hey, we have an app that's optimized for this experience that you can use instead of this website. Do you want to go install it?" And I guess in mobile Safari, which is the iOS browser, and then in Chrome, mobile Chrome, there are already built-in functionalities for like small banner pop-up ads that will they usually pop down from the very top of the browser to say, download the app that's corresponding to this website. And then if you do it, it'll pop you out of the website and go to the app. But there are some sites that will pop up an entire like content blocking web page. So it blocks the entire page and you have to click through like a couple arrows to dismiss in order to get to your content. And it's not a banner ad per se. It's just a huge like content blocking ad that that sits in front at least the one that I'm thinking of is especially awful. It's there's a music chords website that I go to, ultimatechords.com or something like that. Ultimate Guitar, that's it. It's actually ultimate-guitar.com. But they have freely available chord charts and music charts for things. So when I have my ukulele out and I want to play a song, I'll sometimes look it up and it'll direct me to that site if I search for it. But if I'm on my phone and I go to that website, I get the little interstitial like thing that I have to click through. And the really annoying part about it is it has a JavaScript timer that I have to wait for before I can click next. It's like they're forcing me to read this thing that I clearly don't want.
You just don't know you want it, Alan.
Yeah. And the worst part is I think I did end up breaking down and buying the app, the Ultimate Chords or Ultimate Guitar app. But the clicking on the ad doesn't bring you into the app. It brings you to the store to go buy the app. I would think it would be smart enough to redirect into the app, assuming that I've bought it. But it's anyway, all this is nonsense. This is why this thing is not a thing. This is why the ads that force you over to apps is not a thing. And Google is actually agreeing with this, and they're removing pages or removing the mobile friendly certification for pages that are that do that, web pages that do that. So hooray for mobile web browsing and the blocking of kind of large content ads. And kind of interestingly, and along with that, just today was Apple's announcement for the new iPhones and iPads and all that kind of stuff. One of the things that they glossed over is that the browser that comes with iOS 9, the newest upgrade, will support ad blocking. I don't know if it's in app or if they're just supporting plugins in Safari now, but I think that's an interesting kind of tack for them. I'm not sure how they can necessarily justify that, but yay for less ads on the internet. I feel like it's already painful enough browsing on a screen that's really small. I refuse to buy a 6 Plus or a 6S Plus or whatever the number is for the very, very large one. I need all of the real estate I can on those web browsers. And I think it's just one of those things. I think the monetization of the internet through banner ads, I feel like is still around, but it's also kind of on its way out. I think there have to be different ways to drive the ad money, using sponsorships or other kind of methods for things. I feel like just banner ads are universally kind of bad, especially in light of how much banner ads can be used to track your browsing history. I mean, we've talked about a couple things on the show in the past, like the privacy badger that that EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, created. It's a plugin for browsers that blocks a lot of content that is made to track your made to track you across websites by adding cookies or other kinds of things. And incidentally, it also blocks banner ads because most of those websites are trying to kind of harvest data about you. So I think the era of banner ads is hopefully on its way out. We'll see. Hopefully the thing that they use to replace it is not as insidious. I'm sure they'll find a way to abuse their newfound power. But in the meantime, hooray for the internet and browsing it with a little less pain. Also kind of in the hooray for the internet category is an interesting note from Amazon. So Amazon Prime is not just the cheaper shipping rates and things like that. One of the things that built into Amazon Prime is there are a certain number of media download or media available for streaming for free. So that Amazon has a lot of music and video streaming that that you can pay for and stuff you can download. And most of Amazon, I think, is now DRM free if you are if you do pay for it to download it. But they're adding some stuff, or they made an announcement that supposedly you can now download some of the videos that are available through Amazon Prime. You can just only download them to devices that essentially don't have storage. You can download it to their Kindle Fire hardware or certain devices, including the iPad. And I think this is because if they let you download it to like a Mac or a PC, you could potentially lift that out and then share it and then defeat whatever copy protection is built in or anything like that. I'm not sure about this one. I think it's an interesting kind of tack for that. I know that really the only time when I'm really watching video for a long time on an iPad is when I'm flying or when I'm traveling and I don't have access to internet. I will, if I think ahead, this is a key thing. If I think ahead, I will transfer videos that I want to my phone or my iPad to be able to watch them offline. But I think
well, this presents a legal way to do that.
Yeah, right. And I think, hey, it's legal if I do it, if it's my media. usually it's my media anyway. But I think that's really necessary because the bandwidth on planes and most hotel rooms that I've still been in is really bad. I don't know if it's just because of the technology that they're using to send that. I don't know if it's a technological limit that, you know, you can't get enough internet bandwidth to a plane that's moving at almost the speed of sound. But it might have something to do with that, but
you might have some audio lag.
Yeah, but there's no excuse in a hotel, I think, other than they're trying to charge you like, you know, $50 a day to use the internet. Not a thing. But I think the offline access to video is still kind of an important thing in this world. I think streaming is definitely a viable thing for home use. I know that I've had a lot of good luck with Netflix and Hulu and even YouTube kind of from home, but I think you know, I'm also in Silicon Valley, and I think the availability of downloaded video is still going to be a thing until we get fiber to the home. That's our platform. That's our platform. The Not a Thing podcast wants fiber to every home.
That would be a great thing.
That would be kind of sweet, and probably not in our lifetime. But
well, there's some companies out there making good progress.
It's true. I think the you know, and with the with the FCC's kind of reclassification of internet lines and stuff like that that we've also talked about on the show in the past, that will definitely help. We'll just have to see how that goes. In the meantime, Amazon has made the first move in allowing downloading. There hasn't been any noise from the major streaming providers yet, the other ones, Netflix and Hulu and Apple for that matter. So it'll be interesting to see if that pans out as something that that causes kind of a feature war for content providers. We'll see. I mean, I think it's a market that at least in Silicon Valley I don't see directly. So it's interesting. It'll be there are a lot of people though that that don't have kind of good internet. So I think it's a play towards them. I don't know. Would you download stuff that or have you? I mean, I think the locking it down to the device, I think, is smart. Because if you're gonna watch it on that anyway, it might as well work from a downloading perspective. But at the same time, I think. I feel like it's still going to be subvertible. I'm sure there's a way to get around this restriction. But
I would be totally willing to use it in the way it is intended on my mobile devices.
Yeah. Yeah. I still think that
Wi-Fi sucks.
Yeah. Even Wi-Fi in a lot of places is still a little kind of weird. You know, I talked about it in hotels, but even just that, like, cafes or any kind of shared internet space, there's going to be a limitation in the bandwidth still. So, you know, hopefully this is kind of a way around that, if not a stopgap way, a permanent way. But moving from kind of internet and interesting developments, there's an interesting development kind of offline, not internet, but ink. So not soft copy, but hard copy, but not in the way you think. So printer ink is one of the most kind of expensive things around. It's like more expensive than gas. It's more expensive than coffee. per gallon. I forget what the stat is. It's some crazy number. And that's how printer companies make their money, right? I mean, they practically give the printers away for free, and then the ink is you pay more in ink over time than you would buying printers ever. Interestingly enough, the ink just got a lot more expensive. And was it Mexico?
Colombia. Okay. It was headed for Mexico.
Okay. Well, what happened was in Colombia, and this was found by a drug sniffing dog, which I think is impressive. But the drug sniffing dog found cocaine or smelled cocaine in what looked like printer ink cartridges. And they went to look at the printer ink cartridges, and they look like ink. Turns out the cocaine was actually dissolved into the printer ink. This was the plot of James Bond's License to Kill, except yes. Instead of being in ink in the movie, they dissolve the cocaine into gasoline. So I think it's funny because this is pretty much the same thing. I don't know what process you would use to extract the cocaine from the printer ink without it turning all sorts of funky colors, but I find that amazingly ingenuitive. it's just a wild idea, and also it essentially came from a Bond film.
Well, they've been, transporting cocaine across international borders in all kinds of crazy ways. I guess that kind of almost takes us into spoiler territory. I started watching the show Narcos,
mm-hmm.
which is a Netflix original, which talks about pretty much the war on cocaine in the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Pablo Escobar. And, yeah, they have all kinds of interesting ways of transporting cocaine all over the place, and it's all real.
Oh, that's fantastic. That does sound like an interesting show. I unfortunately have next to no bandwidth for another show, but I'll put it on the list. So, what would you say? It's like more moody, or is it? Is it just kind of done in kind of a documentary style? What is the?
No, it kind of reminded me of Goodfellas.
Okay.
I haven't finished the show yet. I just started watching it a few days ago. The first couple episodes were directed by the guy who did the RoboCop remake.
Oh. Hmm.
And one of the main characters is portrayed by Pedro Pascal, who was Oberyn Martell on Game of Thrones.
Yep.
Yeah, it's super violent and adult themed because it's about cocaine. but it's interesting. There's a lot of voiceover from the main character, who's a DEA agent.
Oh, so it's kind of
his history,
kind of noir-y then.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it shows kind of the law enforcement side of things, and then the Pablo Escobar side of things, which is crazy, what he was trying to do and what he did.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I know it is fictionalized, but I have a feeling it's not that far off.
Right. Oh, well, that's great. That's cool. I do enjoy, that as a genre. I didn't know I did until Breaking Bad. But I find that stuff kind of fascinating. I mean, it really is the kind of, this generation's kind of cat and mouse kind of thing, right? You know, the cops and robbers kind of stuff. You know, they're not robbing banks. They're not running alcohol. You know, it's not the Untouchables. No, it's the actual, like, war on drugs, like all the ridiculousness that that came along with that from both sides. You're right, from law enforcement side, and all the different things that they were trying to do. And then also from the the drug dealers and suppliers and distributors and all of the, you know, the infrastructure that kind of grows out of an illegal enterprise. So
that's, and it does give kind of a historical, it is all fictionalized versions of real events, but mm-hmm. they include actual footage at times, which that's is interesting touch.
Yeah.
And it passes the oh shit test. There are multiple times in the first few episodes that just staring at the screen, it's like, oh shit, that just happened. Okay. What's going to happen next?
Cool. Awesome. All right. Well, maybe another one for the list. I'll put it in the queue probably.
It's not a feel good show.
Yeah.
You're probably going to want to get a palate cleanser.
I feel like most of my shows now I need a palate cleanser for.
Well, if you're looking for a palate cleanser, you can always go with Rick and Morty, which might be my favorite show on television right now.
I have a few episodes because I used to use Archer as a palate cleanser, but I finished all of those. And so I'm actually using another H. John Benjamin vehicle. I have 8 episodes of Bob's Burgers queued up just as kind of like standby for when I need a palate cleanser. Cool. All right. Well, that is a pretty good place to pop the tape on the show. I don't record.
Are you
on
using
tape
over there? What type of operation are we running here?
It is still free, by the way.
Right. So the best kind.
Well, I will talk to you next week, Brendan.
Till next time, Alan.